Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek, live from Richmond, Kentucky, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for February 24th, 2012, episode number 345. Sponsored today by Kentucky Performance Products. Good morning, horse world.
I can't take it anymore.
Thank God it's Friday.
I would like, if I may, to take you on a strange journey.
We worked all week so that we can eat and own a little piece of God's ground. Pushing papers and pens, red tape never ends. The stress can turn a smile into a frown. I need some horsing around.
Well, good morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek, and of course, and I am here in Kentucky. We have a special show for you today, live on location, and I am at the World Horseshoeing Classic at the Kentucky Horseshoeing School in Richmond, Kentucky. Jamie has the day off. She's probably sleeping in, although she should be here because there's just nothing but good-looking farriers around. And we've had this discussion a number of times on the show. There's nothing that any girl likes better than a good-looking farrier coming out and doing the... There's special websites for farrier bucks. That, you know, that just tells you something. And I have with me today, who's going to co-host the show with me, I have Joe Police, Director of Marketing for the Kentucky Horseshoeing School. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Glenn. So nice of you to be out here. We appreciate so much. It's an exciting day today, and we are certainly thankful that the Horse Radio Network is out here to help us out.
Well, this is fun. It's the first time I've ever been to a farrier competition. I didn't even know they had them.
Yeah, it's interesting, Glenn. I didn't either until 2 years ago, and I saw my first one last year, and I got to tell you, it was absolutely amazing. The competitors are from all over the world. They travel in here. They spend time, money, and it's almost like a brotherhood, Glenn. And when these guys get together, and gals, when they get together, it's an exciting time. So we're looking forward to a great 3 days.
Well, this is fun. The building is beautiful. Let's do that. Let's talk about the Kentucky Horseshoeing School. What is it? Why is it? And give us a little background on it.
You know, Mitchell Taylor owns our school. Mitchell has owned the school for about 23 years. He built this school a few years ago, Glenn. It was a labor of love for him. It's a dream of his, and it came true. We moved in here of January of 2009. And the school has a total of about 23,000 square feet complete.
It's beautiful. The building's great.
Oh, it's absolutely gorgeous. State-of-the-art. All the equipment is modern, up-to-date. Our classrooms are beautiful. Our corporate offices are gorgeous. We have a beautiful state-of-the-art dormitory. And
you guys actually live here?
Oh, absolutely. We have kids from all over the world coming into our school. Germany, France, Taiwan, you name it, they come over.
Wow.
Yeah.
I said kids. A lot of more kids.
yeah. You know, Glenn, one thing that amazes me is that when these kids get here to this school and they begin to matriculate in the curriculum, they really adapt to Kentucky's way of life. They love it here.
Well, how speaking of the curriculum, how long till you graduate?
We have a 12-week course, 24-week course, and a 36-week course with an apprenticeship or without an apprenticeship. And the long course, Glenn, is the one that we really want kids to get involved in with the apprenticeship, because Mitchell Taylor, our owner, feels that the longer the course, the better the prepared student will be to go out into the farrier world. Education, particularly anatomy, physiology, and the biomechanics, is critical in the curriculum for kids to learn. So you can't learn that in 12 weeks. So it's a long course. The 36-week is a long course, but it's a beneficial course.
And we have another guest here, Londi Tro, who's the CFO here of the school. Good morning, Londi.
Good morning, Glenn.
Come right up to about 2 inches from the mic. There you go. And now, Londi, I went to the school's website, which is?
www.kentuckyhorseshoeingschool.com.
So we're south of Lexington. We're heading into southern Kentucky here. We're about to get into the hills of Kentucky. And I go to the website, and I watch the video that's on the homepage. And here is this girl with, like, an English accent. I'm going, it should be a southern accent. What's wrong? It just was disconnect for me. And you're the girl.
I am, Glenn. And that was all Joe's doing. He seemed to think it would be a good fit. So, yeah.
Well, you sounded great.
Well, thank you.
So how did a girl from South Africa end up here in Kentucky at the horseshoeing school?
It's an interesting story. Funny enough, my brother attended Kentucky Horseshoeing School when it was still at its old location in Mount Eden, Kentucky. And he returned back to South Africa to work for 2 years. He came back, and he actually worked for Mitchell Taylor for a couple of years at the horseshoeing school. He now has his own very successful horseshoeing business based out of Shelbyville, Kentucky. And I was looking to move on in a job, and my brother suggested, well, if you're going to move, you might as well move across the world. So I did. I packed up, and I moved to the Kentucky Horseshoeing School. And, yeah.
And how long ago was that?
October of 2006.
Oh, wow.
So it's been 5.5 years now.
So they must like you. He'd have kicked you out by now.
Yeah, you would think.
You know what? You never make the CFO mad. That's one thing you learn when you work for a corporation is that's the person you want to keep happy all the time because they write your checks.
That's absolutely right. Yep. That's absolutely right, Glenn. We keep Londi very happy. I get her coffee or tea if she wants.
Yeah, I will say Fridays are generally a good day around
here. Yeah. Good day for you anyway. Everybody's happy with you on Friday.
Everyone's really nice to me on Friday.
Now, when they're saying, I need this, and you say, no, we can't afford it, that's when they're unhappy. That's the unhappy day.
You know, my door can just be closed really easily.
Have you worked here before, Glenn?
So now, tell me, how many students will you have at a time here?
Right now, we have 20 students.
Wow.
We normally run 3 classes at a time, so we can have anything up to 36 to 38 students in here at one time.
And
3 different levels.
Do you really go out and recruit, or are you at the point now you've been around long enough that the students are finding you at this point?
We do a bit of both. Joe does a lot of marketing. He goes off, and he does a lot of promotion of the school, but we do get a lot of word-of-mouth referral students, so yeah.
And are you getting any, are there any people who have already been out in the field doing farrier work that come back to take the classes to learn more, a higher education kind of thing?
They don't come back to take the classes we currently teach as our curriculum, but we do have like tailor-made courses that they can come back on and just touch up on some parts of their training that they think they're lacking in. So, yes, it is an option.
Now, Joe, tell us about the competition. Yeah, you know, because probably most of the listeners didn't know we had fair competitions, let alone one that paid $10,000. So tell us what's happening here right now. And by the way, let me set the stage a little bit. We're kind of in an antechamber room right outside of the area where the furnaces are, and they're actually doing the competition right now. So if you hear the tinking in the background, that's actually the competition going on.
That's absolutely right, Glenn. The room that the competitors are using is our forge room. In there are 4 coke forges, and as you know,
I said coal.
Yeah, it's coke is a derivative of coal.
So it's a baby.
It's a baby.
Okay, good.
And
I wasn't totally wrong then.
It burns.
Looks like coal.
Yeah, it does actually, and it's black. I mean, it's dusty too as well. But the competitors will start their fires in the morning, and these fires can get up to 2,300 degrees to heat. What we call bar stock, it's a piece of steel. They will cut off to the proper length and then put that steel in that fire and wait until it gets to the proper heat. At that point, they
proper heat, by the way, is bright orange. That's the proper heat.
Yeah, they tell by the color of the steel.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was just watching this morning.
Yeah.
It's bright orange is the proper heat.
Exactly. And so they begin to form their shoes. There are a team of 4 men and women, and each person on the team has one foot on the horse that they take care of. They have to trim that foot, fit that shoe to that foot, nail that shoe onto the foot.
And they're making the shoes.
Absolutely. Yeah. These are the best craftsmen in the world. They come.
Because a lot of listeners, you know, farriers today don't, a lot of them don't do any hot work at all. So when they're out there in the field, they have never seen a shoe made from scratch in many cases.
That's very true. That's very true, Glenn. But these competitors today know how to make shoes, and they have to actually when they're out. And these are working farriers. These men and women go out and go to work every day.
You mean there's not professional farrier competition, guys?
Some are. Some are. But these men and women...
I can't imagine you make a very good living doing that.
But you know, what? Actually, some of these contests are getting... The World Blacksmith Championship is the mothership behind the World Horseshoeing Classic. Craig Trinka, Mitchell Taylor, Conrad Tro. These men have... These are actual purists, Glenn, in the field. They respect the art, the craft. They absolutely love competition. And again, they're the finest, some of the finest in the world that come here to compete. So it will be 3 intense days of competition, and the.
So as I understand it, day one, we're just doing average shoes here.
Correct.
And then day two, you're actually doing walking horses, which are shot a little differently. And some of these guys, I imagine, coming from other places are going, okay, what's a walking horse? And haven't had that opportunity to build those particular types of shoes.
That's correct. They've never seen these horses before, but yet they have to compete to the judges' specifications. But they're quite skilled. Once they see a foot, they'll know exactly how to trim it, make the shoe, nail it up, and finish it off.
And then day three is my favorite, of course, the draft horses are
brought. That's correct.
Yeah.
That's
and
correct.
I love drafts, and we had a Percheron, and our farrier 25 years ago used to come out and make the shoes for my Percheron, and that was just so much fun to so much bigger than these particular shoes we're doing today.
You know, that's a very, very big animal, and they're wonderful to look at. I mean, every horse is wonderful to look at. The draft horse has its own personality. It allows the shoer to see if he can pick that foot up. You know, it's a heavy foot.
Yep.
They're very, very heavy horses, but they're gentle giants. Most of them are gentle giants, Glenn. So, yeah, and as a matter of fact, Londy's brother, Conrad Tro, has won many competitions up in Calgary by shoeing and making draft shoes.
Up. Londy's saying no, he didn't.
Did he make that up? Oh, he's competing.
He has competed in Calgary. He's won the two-man draft competition with the American Farriers Association convention. Those are two different competitions.
Okay, good. All right.
That's why I have her on the show with you, Glenn.
To correct you.
Exactly.
The marketing guys. You can't trust them. You know how they are.
Yeah.
All right, let's introduce our first guest here.
This is Phil Oliver. Glenn, Phil, he represents Life Data Labs. And everyone
Barriers
knows
formula.
It. Barriers Formula,
yeah.
It is. Barriers Formula, it is. They are one of our title sponsors, Glenn, and they are a company that has given their support not only to the Kentucky Horseshoeing School, but to many, many horse organizations in this country. They have a superb name. They are absolutely one of the finest manufacturers in the world with one of the finest products we've ever encountered here. Yeah.
Well, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
It's good to have you here. We actually saw you in Philadelphia not too long ago.
We did. It was chilly up there, wasn't it?
Yes, we were at the ADA conference in Philadelphia, and that's where we met. Tell us about Farriers Formula for the two people in the audience that don't know what it is.
Farriers Formula was a nutritional supplement that was developed by Dr. Gradley, the founder of Farriers Formula. It's been around for over 30 years. What it does is it targets the hoof structure to help develop a strong, healthy hoof. It does that by providing the proper nutrition to the hoof. It takes approximately 6 months to a year to grow a total hoof structure, sometimes longer if there's damage to the hoof structure. So what Dr. Gradley did was he did numerous studies about the products, about the ingredients, how to combine those and put the proper nutrition into it. Our product has been independently proven and tested. It works very well. What you see is in about 2 to 3 weeks, the mane and tail of the horse will gloss up and shine. This is just a side benefit. Same composition as in the mane and tail that's in the hoof structure. So you get that same benefit. You just seed a lot earlier. It goes there much faster. It takes about 8 to 10 weeks to seed new growth down from the coronary band.
I was going to ask that because, you know, you said about 6 months to a year, but yet we're trimming the hooves every, what, six weeks. So it seems like we wouldn't have to do it as often.
You have to keep the proper nutrition, just like your body needs proper nutrition, the horse's body needs proper nutrition. So you start that, it takes that long to get that new structure to grow.
It's very slow growth.
It's like your fingernails. That's the best thing I can compare it to, because it grows like female's fingernails. So they grow slowly, and there's lots of problems with those. You have different bacteria and fungus that cause issues topically that we can treat with some of the products. And we also have products that you feed nutritionally, such as Ferriformis Double Strength, which is the one that we just came up with about 3 years ago. And it's the same product, it's just doubles the nutritional value, so you feed half as much. We save the end customer, the end user, about 27 cents a day by using the Double Strength as compared to the old Ferriformis. We did that when the economy took a crash and wanted to keep the product in the homes so people still struggle.
And Ferriformis has been around, or Life Data Labs have been around for a while. They're not. It's not a young company.
Yep. You know. Long time.
Yeah. Now, Life Data Labs is out of where?
We are located in Cherokee, Alabama.
Okay.
A very small location there in the top northwestern corner of Cherokee in a cornfield.
That's the southern accent.
Right. I've moved all over the world, so mine's not as bad as Mike Barker's, who also works for Life Data. If you get Mike Barker here, it may take a little bit longer to get out.
Somebody here better have a darn southern accent. That's all I got to say. We couldn't count on Landy for that. She didn't bring us a southern accent at all. Africa accent.
South Africa.
You were, just right. Yeah. You were from the southern part of South Africa.
The very southern part of South Africa. Yes.
Now, I want to get back to that for a minute. Because it's fascinating. South Africa, were you into horses there?
My brother was. I grew up with horses, but no, unfortunately, I don't have a love for horses like everyone else seems to. But, you know, yeah. So it's all my brother.
She has a love of hot terriers, apparently, because that's why she works here. See, Jamie, you're missing out today because there's a bunch of guys out there in tank tops and that are entirely muscle-bound, completely opposite of me out there right now. And there are spectators here, Joe.
Yeah, there are.
There are people here watching, mostly girls, I might add.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there'll be a whole lot more tomorrow and Sunday.
Oh, really?
Those Absolutely.
Those are the wives and girlfriends of the poor boys, though, bending over under the horses, I tell you. That's who they are.
Well, Phil, on behalf of the Kentucky Horseshoeing School and the World Horseshoeing Classic and Horse Radio Network, we just want to thank you for coming over and spending a little time with us. And I know you got to get back to your booth, and so we wish you all the best. And thanks again, and keep that fine Farrier's formula coming our way, buddy.
Well, thank you very much for letting us come.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Take care. Well, Joe, I got to ask you, Jennifer has a couple questions here. She's asking, what is the demographic of the competitors? Well, right now, I didn't see any women, although I heard there was a girl last year.
There was, Glenn.
And I heard she was about 4'2" and as strong as an ox.
She was. And
she still is.
She still is. Yes, she. I don't know if she's returning this year. I haven't been out there to see quite just yet the competition, but I don't know if she's back this year. But she did a great job last year. And what's amazing to us, Glenn, is that, and we have a lot of females at our school. We have 5 this year, and we seem to be seeing a trend. Women in horseshoeing want to come out, go to school, get a great education. And they want to, in fact, some of them compete in some of these contests. But we see the demographic of women coming into our school as it's a steady flow. Let me put it that way.
Yeah. Well, good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. We have with us this morning, if I may introduce Glenn, Ryan Workman. Ryan comes all the way from the Netherlands, and he is a title sponsor of our show. And Ryan is a very close friend of the Kentucky Horseshoeing Schools. His family has been in the horseshoeing business for many, many, many years. His grandfather started it. His father took it over. And he and his sister now run the Workman Horseshoeing Company. And, Ryan, let me ask you something.
Hello, Joe.
Good morning. Thanks for coming and sitting in with us. Tell us a little about the Workman Horseshoe Company, if you don't mind.
Well, actually, I'm the fourth generation. My great-grandfather started our company. He started out as a farrier, like his father did, actually many generations. So we are in our blood. So actually it's our passion to make horseshoes. And, we've done it now for 103 years.
Wow. And so you actually make the horseshoes?
Yeah, we actually make them. Yeah, well, we automize the production process. So it's not done by hand like it's done here. But yeah, we make around 30,000 shoes a day.
Wow. So you're supplying the world, not just the home country,
oh,
for sure.
Nice.
There's a lot more horses there than I thought there were. So tell me now, what different types of shoes will you make?
Well, all kinds of shoes, from Shires to Shetlanders.
And you do aluminum and
actually all steel.
All steel, okay.
Yeah, not aluminum.
Okay. What have you seen change throughout the years? You guys have been doing this for so long. What have you seen change throughout the years? You have to come in a little closer to the mic, too. What have you seen change throughout the years in horseshoes? Has there been a change, or are we still doing it the same way we did it 100 years ago?
Well, not much has changed, but what did change is the perfection of the horseshoe. Horseshoes are getting more beautiful, and the way of shoeing is changing. I mean, it's more perfectionated.
Ryan, it would occur to me that growing up in the horseshoeing business, that you really had to learn the business from the inside out. Were you taught how the horseshoeing process went about by actually working in the shop? Did you actually work in the shop?
Yeah,
in the mills? And let me ask you a question. Knowing the horseshoe business from the ground up, what did that do for you as its owner and spokesman?
Well, the most important thing is actually to see that we have a passion for what we do, for horseshoeing, and then what I saw throughout the years is that farriers all share that passion with us, and that makes us successful. I mean, you have to have passion for what you do, and that is I think our key factor of our success, and that's what I've learned, that we really have that passion, that we are allowed to show that we have that.
Now, your market is all over the world, is it not?
Yes,
your market.
It is.
Yeah. How many countries do you travel to in a year?
Well, that changes, but about 60.
60 countries.
Yes.
How do you manage to keep up with
his passport? They're probably they're checking him out. They're searching every bag. He's got to be delivering something.
Yeah, sir. What have you been doing in Abu Dhabi?
Yes. First, he was in Colombia last week, and this week he's in Europe, and oh no, they're checking every one of your bags every time, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah, they asked me this time. They asked me, sir, what do you do for a living? I'll sell horseshoes. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I'll be serious, please.
Drug dogs out here. And then the drug dogs come and sniff your bags, and they smell hooch.
Yeah.
I mean, that was driving nuts.
That's funny. Yeah. It's not all luck, horseshoes.
Well, Ryan, we really appreciate your willingness to come in to the States and help us at the Kentucky Horseshoeing School. And you've been a big part of Mitch's life, I know, and your family and his family go back for many years. I know that you and he are very close, and we just appreciate everything that you do for our school, Ryan.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you very much.
I like being here, and it's always great being in the States.
Nice to have you here.
Thanks.
So how many countries are represented at the competition right now?
We have two teams from Canada, and we have one team that came in from Wales.
Oh, wow.
And the rest of them are from America. And then, of course, Team Texas tell us that they're from their own country. So we do have Texas and America.
They always do.
Yeah.
They always
do. Yeah.
Glenn, we have a fellow here that's another title sponsor of our show. His name is Kevin Keeler, and he owns a company called, and let me say, Hoof Jack. This is a unique product, Glenn, and I'd like to introduce Kevin Keeler. Kevin, good morning. Thanks for coming out.
My pleasure to be here.
We really appreciate you coming over and being a part of our show. Now, Kevin, you've been making the Hoof Jacks now, what, about 11 years?
Just going into my 11th year right now.
Yeah, tell us a little about the Hoof Jack. Tell us what its purpose is and why you're so passionate about it.
Well, I've been involved in this industry for over 36 years now, and my first year as a farrier, I had a horse collapse on me on the hind, and he took out my knee. And so for most of my career, first 25 years of my career, I was bone on bone in my knee. And so
as a farrier, that's not good.
No, it's not. No. But it was funny that leaning horse on the hind, that I just couldn't take that weight and pressure anymore. So I'm not the first one to design a hoof support system, but I am the person who has designed the most successful. Like, my product is the number one selling hoof support system in the world right now. And I'm not trying to brag. I'm just very, very proud that prior to this, you know, there's not another industry out there that doesn't have a way to hold up what you're working on, a bench, a vise, a clamp, or something. And we're out there like Fred Flintstone and Barney Rebel holding up these 1,000-pound horses.
Well, I would say anybody that invents something that's going to help these guys' backs out, because their life career is so limited anyway, because the backs give out before they're willed to.
Right, and it's a very good point, and it's a very sad point when these gentlemen here, what we love to do, we can't imagine doing anything else with our day. It's kind of like that, crazy as it may seem. But so yes, we're limited by our physical capabilities. We'll never be paid like sports athletes, but
that disability insurance just doesn't exist.
Right, yeah. Right. But we have to take care of our bodies like athletes to be in the business. So the idea is that this takes 100% of the weight off your back and knees while you're performing all hoof care, even for horse owners, picking feet, bandaging abscesses, removing studs, putting on show polish. Just anytime you're going to hold a horse's foot up, it anatomically holds the horse's foot where they're in a more comfortable position. And a comfortable horse is a compliant horse. So if we make the horse comfortable first, now we can work around that and make ourselves comfortable as well. Everybody's a winner. The horse is comfortable, they'll put up with us longer for all these procedures.
You know, Kevin, I've watched the Hoof Jack in use at our school here. And one of the things that is amazing to me is that when young people figure out that this device will save their backs and their knees at such a young age, they automatically use that. I've seen them bring it into the stalls, trimming our horses, shoeing our horses, and it's amazing the amount of hours they go. Without that Hoof Jack, Kevin, I don't think even a young person could last shoeing 15 horses in a day. And this is such a, to me, a revolutionary opportunity.
It seems like something that should have been invented 50 years ago, doesn't it?
Well, that's absolutely right. When I was getting my patents, there were some of these that were done in the past, and I don't. For my base is totally revolutionary. Most of them are metal. Mine is a low linear polyethylene, so it's real quiet if it scrapes on the ground. If it gets knocked on its side, if it gets knocked on its side, it's not going to cut the horse's leg. And my cradle system is it's a suspended, the hoof is suspended in this cradle system, and that's what makes mine very, very unique and different. And well, I've got ended up with seven patents on it because of it's so unique and different. So, and I think it's the timing as well, that the farrier is now, there's a real macho thing going on in this industry, and I think that.
What do you mean by that?
Well, the farriers have an image that tough, rough, burly, I can crawl under a horse and support a 1,000-pound horse. And I think that image has been around for a long time, and now it's about working smarter and lasting longer in a career that farriers are really passionate about. And like I said, they can't imagine doing anything else. But you wake up one morning and all of a sudden the back's not there or the knees aren't there, and it becomes a real challenge. So
this is the only building in America that you can come into and have the smell of burnt hoof immediately when you walk in the office door. It's like you're piping it in from back here.
Exactly right. And everybody feels very comfortable.
Yeah,
and homey.
Everybody's good with that.
Everybody's good with that. You don't smell that smell around. What's wrong?
Yes, right.
I mean,
Something's
wrong.
You
should have a perfume. You should put out a perfume from the horseshoeing school.
Glenn, we burn candles in our office because it comes right through the wall sometimes. We have to burn candles. For us non-farriers, it's a...
sell the smell. Horse women across the world would buy it as perfume. I'm telling you, just bottle it. You can make a fortune.
Kevin, I have a question for you before we go on to our next guest. Let me ask you. Now, you have... you have farriers that have been in the business for 25 years, 30 years. What would you say to them about the hook jack and the need for them to use the hook jack?
Well, I would just say that the biggest stumbling block there is that the farrier would generally say, but I've always done it this way. They've always done it this way. And I think that more and more farriers are realizing I love what I do, but... the older farrier, I always say that pain is a wonderful motivator. And sometimes it takes that of being in pain before you'll turn and look at another option for you. And this is a much easier option than getting a new career. If you just use it for 1 week, promise yourself that you won't throw it off to the side when you get frustrated or impatient or running a little late with your appointments, or start out doing it with your own horses. In a week, you won't work without it. That's just how it is, because you'll see how much more calmer the horses are for you. So there's less confrontation there. There's less, if a horse jerks, sometimes just that jerking would send me to the chiropractor. Now it doesn't. And so it's just, besides the day-to-day relief I get from my back and knees, if a horse blows up, it really puts you in a situation that you're not going to be part of the accident. And that's what I would just say. If you love what you do and you want to last and you want to retire as a farrier, we have to look at different options in different ways. Throughout the years, I've reinvented myself and how I hold tools and how I stand and everything, just because you can't keep doing that day in day, that same stance or that same way you hold your knife or your hammer. You have to change and be adaptable, or the industry goes on and you become a dinosaur.
Kevin, for anybody that wants to go to your website, where would you send them to look at the hook jack?
Well, the easiest is at hookjack.com.
I see.
We have a website there. We have our instructional DVD on our website, information, and we have a live voice at our phone number there when you want to call and ask any questions as well.
All right. Before we let Kevin go, I'm hearing a bad trend here. We've had this debate for a year now on the show with me and my co-host, because I came from Northeast, I came from Pennsylvania, and up there we say hoof. And she kept saying it's hoof. So now I'm hearing everybody say hoof today, and she said, well, you're going to this competition, we're going to end it right here. So how do you say the word?
I think it's geographic. I mean, and I don't even think how I say it. I have to say hoof, and I guess that's how I say it. I mean, aren't there seven different ways how to say Louisville?
Well, thank you for helping me out here, because I think I was losing today, actually.
Well, Mark, maybe our next guest, Glenn, maybe our next guest can help us out in that department. Kevin, right. We want to thank you very much. We appreciate
Are you an English
time.
Teacher?
Thank you.
Thanks.
Glenn, this is Mark Milster. Mark Milster is, now, again, Glenn, I'm not a farrier, so please excuse what I'm about to say, but I understand that he is one of the premier iconic men in this industry who is looked up to by the greatest of farriers. This is what I hear. Again, I'm not a farrier, but...
So he's like the god of farriers?
He is one of them. Let me say that. He is one of them.
All our female listeners just said, I want a picture.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
What's the god of farriers look like?
Glenn, this is Mark Milster. Good morning.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning.
Yeah. All right.
Good to
how
be
you
here.
Say
you guys are too nice. I don't know who told you that, but I'm
going to
have
the southern accent we were looking for all
day.
Yeah,
I'm going to have to find them and pay them. Something.
Where are you from?
Oklahoma.
Oklahoma?
Yeah.
Why did you get that accent in Oklahoma?
I don't know. I've lived there almost all my life.
Oh,
I didn't know I had one.
So now, is it hoof or hoof?
It's hoof. Hoof.
Ugh. I lose then.
It is hoof.
I lose.
Unless you're from England, it's hoof.
Oh, see? I could just say I'm from England without the accent.
Yeah.
So how long have you been doing this job?
24 years.
Wow, 24 years. Yeah. What have you seen change from then to now? What are the big changes?
Well, you know, there's a lot more venues for education. You know,
Yeah, when you started back then, you were apprenticing, and that's really all you had, right?
Yeah, my dad was a farrier, and my grandpa was, too. And I remember going with my dad to the racetrack, and he was shoeing a horse that was that had some problems, was hitting itself, and they would hide their work. You know, they'd take their take the shoes off. They didn't want anybody else to see them. They wouldn't leave them behind. They'd throw them in their box. And nowadays, people are a lot more willing to share their information and ideas. And you know, so that's the biggest thing that I've seen.
You know, Mark, one of the questions I've always had about farriers is how did you get interested? What made you want to become a farrier? I mean, was it, Bill, can you explain that a little bit to us?
Well, I worked for my dad, and I got three older brothers, and every weekend, every summer, you know, every holiday, we were holding horses or helping him, going with him somewhere. And to be honest with you, when I got out, graduated high school, you know, I went to college. I got a college degree in criminal science, and I didn't really want to shoe horses. And but there was a little racetrack in the town that I went to college at, and I could go out there on the weekends and make more money on a Saturday than my friends could working part-time jobs all week. But anyway, I get out of college, and it still really hadn't hit me yet, you know. And I was watching a guy shoe a horse one day, and you know, and I thought, you know, I'm not going to use, you know, I got the degree and nobody can take that from me, but I'm going to shoe horses, you know. And one day, I was in the town where I went to college, and I was shoeing some horses out at the fairgrounds, and I seen a man, the silhouette of this man, I knew who it had to be. It was an instructor I had in college. He was one of the really smart guys that, you know, the guy meant a lot to me. And anyway, I couldn't figure out what he was doing there. So I dropped the foot and went up to him, and he was in the stall, and he was back to me, and I said, Norman? His name was Norman Hess. He turned around. I said, what are you doing here? He said, I'm with my granddaughter. They're having a 4-H show. And we sit down, and we were talking, and he said, you know, how's it going and everything? And I said, it's good. I said, I probably should have never went to college. I said, I just should have went straight into shoeing horses. He said, no. He said, you wouldn't have been any good at it. And I said, what do you mean? He said, you weren't ready. And I thought about that, and he was probably right, because if I'd have went into it when my dad wanted me to, my attitude was probably not right, because I kind of despised it a little, because I was made to do it every weekend, every summer.
Yeah, when it's a family business, no kid wants to do the family
business. Yeah, and once, you know, I had a whole different attitude, that outlook, and it, you know, and it's, I, you know, anyway, that's what, you know, brought me to it, you know, and.
Mark, these competitions are...
Hold that one thought. We're coming back in just a moment. We have to go to a commercial here. And so this is our sponsor, Kentucky Performance Products, today. And we're going to hear a little from them, and we're going to be back here. We are at the... let me get the name right. I keep messing it up. We are at the World Horseshoeing Classic at the Kentucky Horseshoeing School in Richmond, Kentucky. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning. At Kentucky Performance Products, quality assurance is a key ingredient found in every product they sell. Each supplement is manufactured to exacting standards in certified facilities. Their ingredients are sourced from highly reputable suppliers, and their formulas are fixed to ensure consistency in each bucket. So what does the promise of quality assurance mean to you and your horse? It means you can trust that when you purchase a supplement from Kentucky Performance Products, you will see the results that you expect and the quality that you can count on. They guarantee it. Kentucky Performance Products, helping you keep your horses healthy, sound, and competitive. Visit them at kppusa.com. That's kppusa.com. We're back here at the... at the 2012 World Horseshoeing Classic here in Richmond, Kentucky. And I'll tell you, Jennifer, are you there? Can you pipe in here for a second?
I am
here.
You
would love the smell here, because let me tell you, it smells like they're shoeing horses in the next room. That's what it's, and you can smell the forage going. You can just, it's all that that horse women absolutely love. I'm going to come home smelling like horse. You'll love it.
Gloria will be glad to see you, too. She'll want to chew on your sneakers.
Yes, the dog will be sniffing me all over, that's for sure. All right, well, go back to our guest here. So tell me, you know, what we joke a lot on the morning show about farriers and about chewing, and you know, we have probably 80% of our audience is female, so you know, they are always talking about the good looking farrier coming out to do the horses. Oh, wait a minute, we're gathering another good looking farrier here.
There's a farrier roundup going on over
there's
there?
There's another farrier. Yeah, there's a farrier roundup going on here.
we are so fortunate to have Billy Carruthers just sit down in our chair.
Okay.
But go ahead with your thought.
No, I totally lost my thought because doing farrier roundup.
Well, he was one of the winners of the show last year.
Oh, cool.
Billy, we appreciate you coming out this year.
You don't look like a farrier. He doesn't look like a farrier.
Oh, good morning,
well,
everybody.
He's got a fashionable coat on. He's not all dirty.
I'm old-fashioned.
He's all
ask
looking good.
If it's who for hoof.
Is it who for hoof?
It's hoof.
Yeah.
Yay!
See,
you're
with me.
What do you say?
Hoof. See, isn't that nice? That's kind of a gross way to say it, isn't it? I'm with you.
Billy, where are you from? Tell us where you're
from. Wales, originally. But I live in England, live near London, north of London in the countryside, beautiful English countryside, very lucky.
Yeah, you are.
How long have you been a farrier, Billy?
Ooh,
30-some years.
34 years.
34
years, yeah.
34
yeah.
years.
So
well,
I was 16.
You know, when it's over 30
very old
years,
now.
You can just say over 30 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you don't have to count after that.
Billy, if I'm not mistaken, you have a company over in England. Tell us about that company quickly, would you?
Yeah, we farrier supply. We manufacture horseshoes as well. Sort of traditional English concave horseshoes that we're selling worldwide. And, it's a growing company and very lucky to be a part of it. And, you know, it's something we're trying to take global, really, as well, yeah.
Let me ask you a question. You said you were over here and you won this last year. How... Let's get back to the competitions a little bit. How important are they to farriers, and why do you compete? Is it for bragging? It's not for the money, because it's not terrific, but, yeah, you can win some money.
It's a sport. It's as simple as that. It's what I do is a sport, and it just happens to be my profession as well. So I do it because I enjoy doing it, no other reason. I do it for me and nothing else, really.
So bragging rights and just for the...
Oh, you know, you're as good as your last job. There isn't any bragging rights, are there? You know?
True.
Yeah, we all, you know, the level of the competitors here today, you know, they're all on about the same level. It just depends on how you perform on the day, you know, how your mind is. It's like any top sport, you know, it gets better and better. The bar raises, you know. It's just whatever you do on the day. Are there
challenges like in other sports? You know, other sports you'll have a challenge like in your horseshoeing, you know, your stirrup breaks and things like that. Are there challenges here too?
Yeah,
the
absolutely.
Forge isn't right today, or
okay.
You know, just,
your equipment is a big part of it, but most importantly is what's in between your ears. Really, that's how it works. Yeah.
You won the competition last year, Billy. You have a returning team coming back this year. How do you feel about the competition out there? Do you think you might take it again this year?
Oh, good question. I'd love to say yes, but there's so many good guys out there. I've no idea. No
Mark,
idea.
Mark, can you add any bit to that? You've got a team this year yourself.
Yeah, I have a team that I feel like is a good team. I'm with Billy, you know. It's, you know, it's four guys, you know, got three teammates that hopefully if one of us stumbles, the other ones can make up for it. But it's, like you said, the level of competition is so good that, you know, it's just whoever makes the fewest mistakes.
That's an interesting question. Whoever makes the fewest mistakes.
Well,
really,
that's what it's about. At this level, you can't afford to make any mistakes. Mm-hmm. None. And if you make one mistake, if you drop below an eight for any aspect, any discipline, then you're probably not going to win the competition, you know, and that goes to every team member. So, you know, in a competition like this where you are so reliant on the rest of your team, nobody can make a mistake. And that's what the difference is in this competition. You're not just working for yourself as an individual. You're working for your team. So it's a little bit different than what we're used to. So, you know, the pressure's on, really, because you can't let your teammates down. And that's, if you do, you get a bit of a kicking.
That's a long plane ride
back.
You have
to buy the beers.
Yeah, a long plane ride back.
Especially with my boys, they drink champagne, you know.
Now, the competition, too, this is the first time I've seen, because I only ever had one farrier come out to the farm and make shoes. So it's the first time I've seen two of them whacking away at this deal and really truly seeing teamwork like it happens here.
Yeah, well, you know, it really is. Horseshoeing is a team thing, you know. It's physically very tough. And so it's always been a two- or three-man job. But for some reason, we've developed it into an individual job. You know, traditionally, always, and, you know, you look at history, look at forges in the UK, always more than one man working there, you know. But for some reason, we think we can do it on our own.
Yeah.
But if you have
a
short life,
that, I'm sure,
it'll really hurt you.
Was economics?
I think probably is, yeah. It always boils down to manpower and economics, isn't it? And, you know, it's tough, you know. Your lifespan is longer if you do this job with a few of you, without any doubt, you know. You've got to be a very strong, fit man to continue doing this for a living for many years. That's why I train apprentices. Don't tell my boys that, but that's why I train them.
That's an interesting statement, Billy. Is there a regimen of exercises that farriers do every day to keep in that top condition?
They probably don't, but they should do. I should do. My back is in a bad way. It has been for the last 25 years, and it's called stretching. You know, you should stretch every day, but, you know. Nobody's got time to stretch because it doesn't make him any money. But you know,
the stretching is the elbow after work. That's stretching.
It stretches the elbow.
It's the beer bottle.
Yeah. Can you add anything to that, Mark?
But Pilates is very good. Yoga is very good.
Oh,
all
okay.
sorts. And just keeping generally fit. Keep your core strength is really important. As I look down at my big fat belly, you know.
No, I agree with Billy. You know, it's keeping flexible. You know, that's the thing that I noticed that I'm probably losing the most is flexibility. You know, and probably just need to stretch more, work smart.
We did have a farrier that was into yoga, and she said, it was a female, and she said that that was the biggest help for her was when she started yoga because of the stretching.
Yep.
Because she said, I just felt so much better after that because it kept those muscles stretched to where they should have been.
Yeah. But it's like everything else, it's the discipline of
doing it.
And, you know,
and that's
you don't
true
see
for any athlete.
You never see an athlete just go into a run. He always stretches before he runs or, you know, before anybody does any physical exercise, he always do some sort of warm-up. And we just fail to do it. And I'm the biggest culprit, and I need it more than anybody. You know?
I don't know about that.
Well, I got to just real quick here. You know, we're talking to farriers, and one of the ways that you can keep track of your farrier appointments, and you guys might not even know about this, but it's really cool. It's a little iPhone application called Pocket Stable, and it's $3.99. You download it to your iPhone. You just go to the App Store and search for Pocket Stable. You can track your farrier visits, your dentist visits. You can track your worming. You can track your shots and when they're due, and it will automatically give you reminders when you set up the reminder when you want. So 6 weeks for the farrier, everybody forgets to call the farrier, or you put it off, and the farrier's not going to call you. So you need to do that, and this does it automatically for you. You'll never forget an appointment again with Pocket Stable. So check it out at the App Store at PocketStable.com. You guys didn't know about that one, did you?
Yeah, sounds like a good idea.
It is. It's great. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of vets now that recommend it because of the shots thing. And you can actually keep track of the individual shots and everything in there. So it's a pretty cool little application. What's the difference in the shoes today as far as weight and things? Have they changed? Have they gotten lighter in the last number of years?
I don't think so. There's nothing new in horseshoeing, nothing that we haven't done 100, 200, 300, 400 years ago. We just keep on reinventing stuff. That's all we do.
Okay. All right. That's cool. And are more people with the – are you guys opposed to the whole new barefoot trend, or are you for the new barefoot trend?
Oh, well, I've been barefoot trimming for 34 years.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. So no opposition to that?
No, absolutely. You know, barefoot is best. You know, but you've got to be careful that you don't wear those feet out. We put shoes on to protect.
Right.
You know, but you don't need a barefoot trimmer to barefoot trim your horse. It's called a farrier.
Yeah, right. Do any of these competitions combine farrier and blacksmithing where you're actually making other things at the competition? Are there any combination competitions? You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Calgary does.
Yeah.
I believe in the UK.
Very often we have classes where you might make a pair of tongs or something, you know. And then make the shoe with the tongs you made. So little novelty classes like that are always good fun.
Yeah. We used to have a class at Calgary, a creative forging class. And I believe in the in your guys' Royal Show, don't they have a class that's a blacksmithing class?
Yeah, they do. But I think I don't know. I think the two schools are separate, you know. I
just have noticed
people focus on farrier or they focus on blacksmithing, you know, and it's really nice to have those skills. And a lot of guys do have both skills, but you know, if you're in a shoeing competition, then you want it to be all about shoeing and not about blacksmithing, really. Personally, you know, you need to distinguish between the two because.
I've known a couple of farriers that were really kind of into blacksmithing and went into making knives seemed to be a thing that they went into. I guess the fascination of the layered steel and all that.
It's a great, you know, it's an amazing art, anything to do with blacksmithing. It just never fails to amaze me. You know, you see some of the stuff they've got here today, actually. You know, some of the things people have donated for the auction. At the skill level, it's just incredible. There's a Damascus... breast cancer sign that who's that gentleman that made that? William Kenny
Kiner.
William Kiner. It's really special, you know.
And your trophies are kind of neat too, aren't they? Tell us about the trophies. They're kind of neat.
Yeah, the wooden feet. Did you see those?
Wooden horse feet.
Wooden,
yeah.
Those are works of art.
Yeah, I want three of those this year.
Yeah. Those are works of art.
Mark's going to try and get a couple off me, but he's not.
I want to ask you a question. We've asked several farriers this question, but what got you started in the business? What piqued your interest? How old were you? What was it that drew you to the industry?
It's a very simple one, actually, and I bet you've heard the story many times from other people, but I was 16, had a pony. The farrier came to shoe my pony. And I looked at him and I thought, that looks like a good idea. And then I hounded him and hounded him and hounded him to give me an apprenticeship. And he wouldn't. And so I got an apprenticeship with somebody else, which didn't last very long. And then I went back to my original farrier and wore him down to the point where he just had to give me a job. And he did. And he's regretted it ever since.
Yeah, I was going to say, you were just a pain in the ass.
And to this day, Billy, he's still one of my best mates, actually. Yeah. Yeah.
Billy, there's a little bit of a different standard if you would explain the amount of schooling that one has to undergo in England versus America. Can you explain that a bit?
It's because we have a registration act about shoeing horses. You have to be a registered farrier to be legally able to shoe horses. And it's an act of parliament, and it's against the law for anybody to shoe a horse. You can be fined or imprisoned if you do shoe a horse without being a registered farrier. That's not to say it works for the industry, but it is what it is. And so to follow that up, we have an apprenticeship system, which is about 4 years and 3 months. And it's an indentured, old-fashioned apprenticeship system. And it, you know, that part of it works well. The schooling is very good. There's, I think, within that 4 years, there's 30 weeks that the guys spend at college, block release college, and all the knowledge is there. But, you know, it doesn't really make the standard of shoeing any difference in the UK to other countries, in so much as, you know, the levels that you have in the States are as high as we have in the UK. But I think the general standard would probably be well, it might be better in the UK, you know, generally, but at the top end, it's exactly the same.
You have a lot of women shoeing horses in England?
Yeah, quite a few, yeah. Yeah, that's coming, yeah, definitely. Coming more popular, yeah.
It's interesting. Well, Billy, I want to thank you very much for spending some time with us this morning, and as a last year's champion, we wish you the very best this year.
I'll need all that love.
I know you'll be out there trying hard, and thanks so much for participating again and for coming over and visiting with us.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Enjoyed
it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good luck.
Good luck.
Glenn, we have with us Mr. Craig Trinka. He's our next guest. And Craig is the, if you'll let me use the word, he is the originator, the starter of the World Championship Blacksmiths. He's the one who had this idea to create this wonderful World Horseshoeing Classic. Craig Trinka is one of the icons, again, in the industry, and brings a great flavor to our industry. and has gone back many, many years with Mitch Taylor, Billy Carruthers, Mark Milster, and many of the great farriers. So let me introduce him to you this morning.
Good morning.
How are you guys doing this morning?
Good. So I'm getting a request here. Jennifer says that the listeners want to know more about exactly how the competition works.
All right.
So, like, from start to finish, like with one hoof, what are they doing?
Well, it's like a dressage test. Everybody starts with a perfect score, and then what you're doing is you're trying to give the interpretation of the foot. So you have a sole, hoof wall, frog, and you have three judges, and they judge it and score it from a score of 1 to 10. Did they help that frog? Did they hinder it? Did they remove any trappy items?
And are they watching the whole time?
They're judging in stages.
Okay.
So there's 2.5 hours. They have 2.5 hours to put 4 shoes from handmade bar stock on a horse. And the test today is hunter shoeing for fox hunting and hunting. And it's for horses that are going to go on over uncertain ground and horses that will be going over fences and people that are a little heavy on the forehand so the horses are safed up behind and stuff like that. So each team has to prep, each person on the team preps a corner of the horse, one front left, front right, back left, back right. And then what they will do is they'll get a score of 1 to 10 on their hoof prep. And then here's the really, really important part is in how they made that shoe. So the shoe fit, a score of 1 to 10 on the shoe fit.
And they're starting with a bar of steel.
Piece of bar stock, straight bar stock.
And tell us the process, because a lot of the listeners have never seen that because they're not making shoes in the field as much as they used to.
Well, the thing is it's like, back up just a little bit, is no one... If they've ever anybody's messed with a gun, no one's ever been attacked by a target.
Okay.
You never
right.
been out in the woods and a round target comes up and oh attacks you. Well, you shoot at targets all the time to bring muscle memory and to develop skills. Well, shoemaking is developing the skills, and so you're learning skill sets to where you can do the most important job, which is fit the foot in which is trimmed. So you start from straight bar stock, and most schools, you have to learn to make a shoe from straight bar stock because keg shoes are pre-manufactured shoes. They still have to learn to be fashioned to fit onto a horse's foot.
And do the 4 shoes, they're being made by 4 different guys on the team.
Yeah.
Do they have to match? Does it look like one guy did it?
Yes. Yeah. These guys do what they call practice. They'll go to each other's shops 5 or 6 times. And they know each other well enough. It looks like one person shod the horse. Their ideology is all the same. It's a pretty intense deal.
And you talk about bar stock. What exactly is bar stock?
Bar stock is a flat bar. It comes in a million different shapes and sizes. What they start with a piece of 5/8 square bar stock. So it's a perfect square, about the size of a piece of dice. And they drive it into a block to make a V. Then they cut it with a creaser to open it up, and that's where the nails fit in. And so it's a rim shoe. They making homemade rim shoes is what they're making today.
And so they're really starting from a square and turning it into a horseshoe.
Yes. Square bar stock.
And it is amazing how much work when you watch them out here pounding on that steel to get it the right shape.
Oh, and last year we had 4 teams, Team Wales, Team Canada, and Team WCB, we're all separated by a quarter point, a quarter point increments, and there's about 300 points up for grabs. So, I mean, they're really, really doing it to the nth degree. And see, the biggest disease of all farriers is isolation. So this is the interaction is what these guys are here for. That's their payment, is they want to have everybody look at that work because, you know, when you're by yourself, you think that everything you do is correct. But when you get around your peers, they're saying, no, that's not correct. You know what I mean? And that's what they want.
You know, you talked about rim shoes, and that's a term that not too many people know anymore because, you know, they're not used a lot. Tell everybody that hasn't seen a rim shoe what a rim shoe is.
That's what the start was, is rim shoes were shoes like polo shoes and barrel horse shoes, and they were just a rim. And that was swedged out in the mills, and those were the easiest way for them to make. They didn't have fullering, which is what we have.
What's it look like?
There are two. It looks like a W. If you were to look at a W, or I don't say an M, but a W, you tip it over on itself, and that's where.
So the point sides are down.
Yeah. The sides are down, and that's it looks like a W. The cross section of the shoe looks like a W.
Well, I get to tell you the truth, Joe. I haven't seen one of those on a horse in a long time because I'm not in that world.
Well, we're going to have 138 feet picked up and looked at, or 160. They'll look at those feet that many times. These guys are picking up those feet five and six times to be judged. And so you need to go out there and take a look
at it. I'm going to, for sure.
You know, one of the most interesting questions that I like to ask, particularly to Craig, is when did you get started, Craig, in this industry, and what prompted you to get into it? Why did you really want to be a farrier?
Well, ignorance is bliss. You know, I mean, I thought it was going to be easy. And so what I did is I had a horse, just like Billy was telling you, I had a horse and I had the farrier come out, and I was like, kid, I think that men don't like horses until they realize women have horses.
I know. I wish I'd figured that out about the age of 12, by the way.
And then
I'd have joined Pony Club, and I'd have been a star.
So, but we
make it so hard on ourselves.
Yeah, we get into horses for like the mechanical reasons. Like it would be fun to ride one, but we don't actually love a horse like a woman loves a horse. A woman loves a horse, but a man don't love a horse until they realize the woman loves the horse. And like, I'm a horse husband.
I'm there with you.
So I like the mechanical aspect of it, the whole mechanics of it. It was intriguing, and it's endless. It's endless. So
the hot girls and breeches on the appointments had nothing to do with it?
Man, oh, man, I'll tell you what. No, it didn't. I refuse to answer.
His wife's in the next room. Well, Craig, let me ask you a question. You've developed quite a following in the WCB and World Classic here. You've increased your team members this year considerably, and your world contests all over the country are growing by leaps and bounds. Tell our listeners what it is that is causing this to grow. Why is it growing so nicely for you?
Well, I think that if you were to start up a company like we did, it was the worst absolute time. It was after the big fall. Everything started to go backwards, and I think education, when you have a bad economy, education is one of the answers. And so when it starts to become competitive, do you agree?
That's the time when people need to learn new skills.
Yeah. And so the competition got tight. And when it got tight, we're offering something that no one else is offering, which is to learn and develop skill sets to do our trade. Because, you know, whether you'd like to say it or not, in this country, you know, Billy touched on it, you can flunk out a septic tank cleaning school tomorrow and become a farrier.
Well, you know, that's a good analogy. One of the things about farriers, too, is horses always need their feet done. I mean, regardless of the economy, every 6 weeks comes, and horses need their feet done. And in some areas of the country, there's still a shortage. People have a tough time finding a farrier to come out.
Well, and the thing is that what's changed in my lifetime of shoeing is that when I first started, horses were livestock. And now horses are companion animals. They're expensive. People want to take care of them, and they want to take good care of them. They don't want a Hanyok to come out and do something crazy. So you got to be on your game. They want professionals. You want a professional person to come out and work on your animal.
Let me ask you this real quick, Craig. Education, you stressed education. I know you're all about education, and you're constantly learning. Tell us quickly about a farrier's education. Tell us what you would like to see.
All right. Well, this would probably pertain to your listeners more a little bit. Is I have like ladies and with the bad economy, people are, can I learn to trim my own horses? Can I do this? And my son, I'm in the education process right now because my son is working his way through college, trimming and shoeing. He's worked with me since he was 14 years old, and it took him 3 years just to hold a horse's leg to where he could attempt to trim it. And so you just don't pick up a foot like you would pick up a piece of wood and start working on it. You learn to get along with the animal, and if the horse doesn't even like you. So to answer your question, it keeps going up. Everything is relevant, but it goes up exponentially all the time. It's just, there's always somebody better. There's always somebody that's working, and that's what drives these people is man, you want someone to be keeping you crisp. And I mean, I expect way more out of the horse's feet than my customers expect out of their feet because I expect more from myself.
I got to ask, though. I got to get a – this is something we haven't touched on, and we're going to have to touch on it, is how much of a farrier's job is really being a psychologist? Women just unload on you guys.
Bartender.
It's like a bartender. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, if I had Prozac salt licks in the back of my truck, I could sell them.
That's pretty good. I'm going to remember that.
I give me a big old Prozac salt lick, and everybody, you know, it's like, was that out loud? Sometimes I don't use my indoor voice. All right. So
I've never heard that.
No, but it is. And you know what? But people don't want it stressful. Like, people don't want a fairy to come out and like, oh, you know.
They don't want you whining. They want to whine.
Yeah.
They don't want to hear you complain.
Well, here's my conversation with 99.9% of my customers. Is that right? Huh. Yeah.
All while bent over.
Exactly. Is that right? And then, like, the way a horseshoer tells somebody that they don't like him is they're like, oh, bless him. He's a good guy. He's a good guy, yeah. Oh, bless his soul.
Hey, before we go on here, there's somebody that just walked by that is a regular and that all of our listeners from around the world know about because he contributes almost every day to our show. He's on there all the time. He listens almost every day. He's one of my man nation. You know, in this world, as you guys know, it's mostly women. We have a lot of male listeners to this morning show. And this guy is one of them. Rick Connolly, how are you?
Good morning, Glenn.
Come on a little bit closer.
Good morning.
It's so weird. It's good to finally meet you.
Hey, I heard the comment about the breeches. I had a young lady in here ask me to take a photo of her her boyfriend and to make sure and get those Popeye arms of his.
You're here why, Rick?
Well, I travel around taking horse photos everywhere. And this is, for me, it's the middle of the winter up here in our part of the country. And there's nothing else going on. So, no, actually, I came down here last year. A former student here told me about this, and I really enjoyed it. And I got some great shots out on my internet site. So I couldn't wait to come back this year. Last year I only came for the draft horse day, but this year I'm going to be here all 3 days. So we have a lot of good shots out on the website.
Well, what's the website again so everybody can check them out?
It's ConleysHorseFotos.com or DraftHorseFotos.com. Used to be primarily a draft horse specialist, but I've had to expand a little bit because that market's gotten a little soft.
So now tell me, will you post some pictures from here up on our Horses in the Morning Facebook page for us?
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah.
Well, it's so good to meet a listener.
Yeah, I mean, you and I have talked back and forth on the phone a couple of times. I've been on the show a couple of times. We've exchanged emails, but this morning's the first time we actually met face-to-face, so
and,
pleasure.
And over the smell of hoof. Thank you, Rick.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. Good to see a listener here today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Rick. We appreciate it. Craig, I have a question for you. Next year, have you formulated the dates for this show next year yet, or are you still in the formulation stages?
I think we're going to try and stick with about the last weekend in February.
That's great. You know, Glenn, this show, this particular program that Craig organizes, and we start working on this, and we have a team of people that Craig, we do a conference call, a team of people get together on the phone. Everybody has their portion to do, and then we follow that list. And so I think that's why Craig pulls this off so smoothly every year, because his organization is behind him, and next year, this is going to grow. Would you say, Craig?
Oh, yeah.
How many teams are here this
13
year?
13 teams 13. From four different countries, and Arkansas is represented. So.
And I got to tell you, my wife wants to know how we can get our horse down here to be one of the horses that's used and get the best shoeing in the world on our horse.
You know what? It's funny. It's funny. It's like people, when they hear the word like competition, people visualize going fast and haphazard work. But
you're our time. Do you have a certain time limit?
You have a time limit, and it's the time limit.
But it's like hours, though.
It's 2.5 hours to shoe a horse all the way around with straight bar stock. And there's plenty of time if you do it right. But if you have to stop, it gets pretty, it's just not going to be as good as you want. But I would say that I would say that the worst job is still a winning job out there on that floor.
Right, yeah. So that's why we want to know how we get our horses.
Oh, man, we'll hook you up. Bring them down. Bring them down.
Because there are a lot of horses that go through here in
the
weekend.
Oh, man, and the hunter jobs are nice. It's good shoeing. I think and we try to, you know, like I always try to involve the crowd and say, you know, there are no stupid questions, just stupid people who ask questions, you know? No, I'm just...
That'd be me. Yeah. I think he's referring to me.
It's all good, but it's a great event. I just think that the school and the education, as much learning as you can get.
Anybody can enter, right? So if a farrier's getting a team together, they can enter.
Yes, yep. Yes. And someday we'll have to limit it, but right now, you know, it's like...
How many forges do you have here?
There's limitless forges.
Oh, really?
Okay. In Crossdyke. I mean, we have a lot of room to grow.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Where's your next venue, Craig?
We're going up to the Madison Horse Fair, the Midwest Horse Fair in Madison, Wisconsin. We are like the NFR. We have 5 contests around the country, and they go for aggregate points for the national champion.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay.
So what we do is we have, and then see what we do.
Just like the hunters, you're accumulating points.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what they're doing is then what we do is we send the WCB has the 4 guys that made the most points over the year. They formulate our team that's representing here.
Wow. Cool.
Well, Craig Trinka,
thank you, Tim.
We appreciate your time. Thanks for stopping by and visiting with Glenn.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Glenn, I have a fellow here that is probably one of the most...
He looks familiar to me, too.
His name is Kirk Atkins. Kirk Atkins comes from the... He's from California, Glenn, and he was with the... UC Davis Veterinarian Program. He was their lead instructor at UC Davis. And when he retired, he found that he wanted to do some more teaching. So he and Mitch had come together for many years and visited and shared information and shared education. So Mitch invited him out here to do some adjunct teaching. And so Kirk Atkins is one of those, again, icons of the shoeing industry. And Kirk, good morning to you. Thanks for coming up to the microphone and visiting with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Kirk, tell us a little bit about your career and what you really specialize in and how you see the industry.
Well, basically, my family has had horses all our life, and I started getting interested in the horseshoeing because my grandfather was trimming our foundered pony. And so I can recall back in the early days being in the back of the truck with a pony as we dropped it off at the UC Davis Vet Med Teaching Hospital. And at that point, I was thoroughly interested in horses and horses' feet and the veterinary medicine profession. So upon graduation from high school after our family horse business, I kept it working at it. I traveled about California working my way through school shoeing horses, pretty much self-taught. And then I found that shoeing horses was a pretty efficient way to get through school. So I paid my way through school shoeing horses and entered into UC Davis in 1975 and graduated with a bachelor of science degree and started applying to veterinary school and missed it the first time, so then I went into graduate school in comparative anatomy and pathology and did several years of study there. And in the process, I was noted as being one of the better skilled farriers, so I was asked to substitute for the farrier that was at the school there. And unfortunately, he died of a stroke, and I was the substitute at the time, so I was thrown into the clinic as a relatively green farrier. And kind of like
a way to get a job.
Yeah. Yeah, to have your predecessor die.
Well, they say there's some industries, you know, I'm not going to get in unless somebody dies. Well, you really did.
In fact, it was pretty close to the truth. But the thing is that neither sink or swim. And I think a good solid foundation of the anatomy and the physiology that I had in my bachelor's degree and graduate degree and in preparing for veterinary school. Plus, I really enjoyed the horses. And so when that opportunity opened up, I was like, well, I'm going to stick around here. And this is a lot of fun. And I'm doing what I like. And the environment is absolutely electric. And just was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And so you know, after several years there, like 16, I finally said maybe I had better start planning some sort of exit strategy and began, you know, different ventures, you know, designing a different horseshoe and some other products. But teaching was always my exit strategy, and so I was an adjunct instructor, a lecturer for animal science, UC Davis. And that's been pretty much ongoing for 25 years now. So,
we just did a trip where we did live shows at Norco, California. And you're familiar with Norco.
Familiar with Norco.
And that was an interesting experience for us. We had never been to Norco before and see a town where there's horses literally in every backyard.
And the front yard.
And the front
yard.
Sure. Well, Kirk,
before we go.
Yeah.
Are you a pilot?
Yes, I
see your hat. So you're flying farrier.
I did do a little bit of that. I do a lot of endurance horses. That's my passion as far as the horses shoeing is concerned. And I was going up and down the state and hit my midlife crisis and got a small experimental private plane. And
that's the way to start, with an experimental private plane.
Yeah.
It's just what everybody wants to fly in first.
Yeah, well, actually, it's not a bad way to go. I do own an experimental plane and maintain it and have built many parts of it myself. But I always wanted to fly as my second career after horses, and so this way I was able to combine both of them. But right now I don't fly too much because most of the horses that I was working on were laminitis cases and this and that, and they all pass away or something. So right now I'm kind of looking for more clients that need somebody that I can fly to.
The first flying farrier I ever met.
Absolutely. Well, Kirk, thanks very much for your help on the radio this morning. We appreciate all you've done, and keep up the great work here at our school. And Glenn, I'd like to introduce a fellow by the name of Chad Chance, and he owns a company called Hook Watch. Chad is one of our partners, and he's a farrier as well.
And Chad, or for the ladies out there, Chad is what you would envision would be here at the farrier competition today.
This
that's a compliment.
This cat is extraordinary, Glenn. When I met him, I think it was last year, he was doing some complimentary videos out here for our folks. But as his company grew and as he grew, he's a farrier, by the way. But as he grew,
By the upper body.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But he graced us with his presence this year again. So we're happy to have him on board and as part of the team. So, Chad, let me ask you a question. How long have you been a farrier?
26 years.
Okay, great. Now, 26 years. You don't look older than what?
10.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, some guys just have
okay,
good genes.
Let's describe this. He's blonde.
Yeah.
He looks like a surfer guy from California.
There you have it.
He has muscles coming out of his ears.
Right.
And he does not look like he's over 25.
There you have it.
I mean.
There you have it. There you have it.
I should ask you the same question. Was the best part working with the horses or going out to the breeches-laden girls that were at the farm? Don't answer it. You don't have to. Okay. We already know
the
answer.
Put me on the spot right here.
But Chad, tell us a little about Hook Watch.
You know, Hook Watch is a relatively new company. It's 3 years old, and, you know, it was birthed from a vision of educating farriers from a different medium. You know, most of the things where farriers can get continuing education comes from clinics, places where they actually have to go out of their home or shop, out of their office, sometimes out of town, out of state, out of country. And I wanted to bring something where they could put a website together where they could go in one central location and get the clinics and things that maybe they couldn't afford or didn't have time to go out and do and bring it right into their homes or now their cell phones. And through the video, we can do that now.
That's a great opportunity. I think education, again, can you speak to education for about a minute, Chad? How necessary is education, not only to the horse public, the horse owner, but to farriers and people in the hoof industry? Tell us about that.
Well, I think education is so important in the sense that, you know, we get into our own clients, our own horses, our own business as we grow it. And sometimes if you get busy and don't have the time to go out and do it, you get in a box. And with horses changing, with new technologies, with horses evolving in the show world, which I shoe horses in, the specifically show horses, you know, the competition gets tougher every year. And so you have to move and grow with that kind of a speed or you get left behind. And so if you don't go out to the horse shows, learn from farriers or clinics or people that, you know more than you, I've always stood by a saying, you can't teach yourself something you don't know. And so if you don't go out and get education, you're just going to be left behind. And with the economic times and the horse industry the way it is, those people that are seeking education and trying to get better and helping the horses, helping the trainers, the horse owners, and the horses themselves, those are the guys that I see as I travel around the country, which I do, that are staying busy and continuing to grow and expand their businesses. And those that don't, unfortunately, you know, they get left behind, and it's a sad thing. And so we're just trying to produce more avenues and channels for people to get educated. We believe in here at the WCB through education through competition.
And well, I'm at your website now, hoofwatch.com.
Yes, sir.
And you do have a whole bunch of different resources on here. I'm just checking it out.
Yeah, that's a great resource. And, you know, we try to bring this WCB contest into the, you know, the living rooms or the offices or even the cell phones of people. We're going to be producing media all weekend and running it on the website. And my YouTube channel of Hoofwatch, you know, YouTube/Hoofwatch, will be running videos. And we're just excited to be partnered with the Kentucky Horseshoeing School. And
like, who knew there was a video on tool maintenance? But I guess when you're a farrier, your tools are it. So, you know.
That's exactly right. You're only as good as your tools.
Right.
And because you smash them into hard steel on a hard anvil with a hard hammer, they have to, they break down, you know. You smash the three things together, and you got to fix them. They got to be sharpened. They've got to, you know, be reset and things of that nature.
Wow. Well, this has been great. We're running out of time here, Joe. Was there anything else you wanted to cover today?
You know, Glenn, the hour's gone by so fast, but I just want to thank you and Horse Radio Network for allowing us the opportunity to bring this show out to the public and to really tell the public that farriers coming up in this day and age are educated men and women. They want the best for the horses out there, and the Kentucky Horseshoeing School is an integral part, as Hoofwatch is. And if I can, for about 20 seconds,
yeah,
have one of the greatest instructors the school has ever had in our midst. His name is Nick Hess. Nick, say good morning to everybody.
Hi, thank you, Joe.
Yeah,
morning,
Nick is a graduate of our school, Glenn, and one of the most exemplary students we've ever had. And Nick, tell us a quick minute about what your function is here at our school and what you deem very important as an instructor to your students. We have about a minute.
Yeah, basically, I feel like the luckiest person in the world. What I do, through the work week is I get to teach these students, and it gives me a great opportunity by breaking things down and forcing me to explain them clearly, you know, to students. It's something, a completely foreign trade to them, you know. And that gives me a great opportunity to learn.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Joe. We really appreciate it. Now, I have a favor to ask. For coming out here and for smelling like hoop when I go home today, I really like the shirt, the 2012 World Championship shirt. You got to get me a shirt.
Yes.
A shirt.
Not a problem.
Okay, good.
We'll get your size, Glenn. Thanks so much.
This has been fun, actually.
I'm glad.
Been a lot of fun. I hope the listeners have enjoyed it. I hope they realize that farriers do put in a lot of work behind the scenes.
That's right.
That truly a really good farrier or blacksmith, for that matter, they are always wanting to learn. You know, when I've known some of the really good ones over the years, they constantly are wanting to go to conventions, and they constantly want to learn because, one, it makes their job a little easier,
mm-hmm,
but they're just curious people. They wouldn't do it otherwise. They have to sit here and listen to us whine the entire time they're there about our whole lives. They really do hear more than our psychiatrist, you know. They really do. So to put up with us, to put up with the humans, we always say, you know, in the horse business, the horses are easy, it's the humans that are trouble.
That's right.
Yes. Farriers probably can say that 100 times over.
That's
but
right.
You guys truly are a good group out here. Thank you so much for inviting us out. And what's the website again?
www.KentuckyHorseshoeingSchool.com. All one word, Glenn.
KentuckyHorseshoeingSchool.com, just south of Lexington, Kentucky. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Jennifer. I would say thank you to Jamie, but she pretty much just had to sleep in this morning and got the day off, so she's just out there having fun. We'll be back again Monday morning at 9 a.m. live here on Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network. Have a great weekend, everybody. Wear your helmets.